Hi everyone, welcome to People I Almost Know. I'm Michelle and my guest today is Matt Cannon. I almost know Matt from his blog, The Seeking Pastor, and I originally met him through his friend Larry Carter, who has been a guest here before. Larry suggested I talk to Matt, telling me he's a Baptist pastor raising a Catholic nun. And I obviously couldn't resist that. Matt was kind enough to give me some of his time, and we talked about how he's not your stereotypical pastor, the challenges of writing for public consumption, how he got most of his kids practically all at once, and that time he knocked a hole in the top of his head. Matt's a super nice guy, and I really enjoyed our chat, and I hope you do too. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
Okay, so would you like to, before we get started, to just tell everybody a little bit about yourself, who you are?
Sure. I'm Matt Cannon. I'm 36 years old. I'm born in East Knoxville. I live now in Harriman, Tennessee, which is west of Knoxville a little ways. I've been married to my wife, Christy, for 14 years. We have five children. 11 years old, 10 years old, 2 9-year-olds, and a 5-year-old.
Wow.
That keeps us pretty busy. Four of our children are adopted. Our youngest is biological to us.
Okay.
Let's see, I'm a pastor, of Lee Village Baptist Church in Harriman. I've been there for, it'll be 2 years in November. I've pastored various churches over the last few years. This is the first one I've been full-time at. The other ones I was bivocational with another full-time job to supplement my income and things. And let's see, what else is there to know about me? I blog, of course, which is, I guess, how you got to know me. Daily now. It was sporadically for quite a while, then it was daily for a while, then I stopped for several months and have gotten back to it recently.
Okay.
So that's the skinny on me, I guess, if you will.
Well,
not much skinny about me, but
well, luckily, see, this is what I like about podcasts. You know, I have a face for podcast kind of deal.
Absolutely.
So, you know, looking at your blog, of course, I follow your blog and I do like your blog. But on your blog, you know, on your about page, you said, "I'm not one of those pastors." So,
sure.
You know, one thing I'm curious about is obviously I've read it, so I know what you're talking about. But if you wanted to talk about that a little bit, but also I'm curious about the being a pastor, but also having to work a full-time job. I mean, that's got to be terrible. I mean, not now, but in your past. I know two questions at once, but you can handle it.
Absolutely, no problem. Well, not being one of those kind of pastors, there's stereotypical faults that people have when I think of a pastor sometimes, and that is sort of stuffy and joyless and sometimes judgmental, mean-spirited, things like that, at least in my part of the country. That's kind of the mindset that a lot of folks have, and I'm not that. I'm not stuffy. I'm not stodgy. I try to use humor in what I do and you know, in the blogs that I write and the sermons that I preach. And I don't go around, you know, looking the part all the time, if you will. I don't have nice hair. I don't wear real nice three-piece suits or anything like that. Of course, that's more older school than what is, you know, happening now with younger pastors. But I'm just a regular guy that I believe that God has called me to a particular mission, particular thing to do with my life, and that don't mean that I can't be a regular person that enjoys life and that laughs and that has that kind of desire just to be who God made me to be. Yes, He called me to be a pastor, but I'm not just that.
Yeah.
I'm not the stereotypical pastor. Now, as far as working and being a pastor, I did that for oh, goodness gracious, 10, 11, 12 years, I guess.
That's a long time.
Yes, yeah, pastoring various churches, but also working a full-time job. And some very big challenges in doing that. Of course, the churches that have bivocational pastors, which is what we're called, when you work a full-time job, churches like that normally understand that you can't do everything a normal full-time pastor does. And so they understand that I couldn't be at you know, hospitals all the time or surgeries or, you know, visit as much as a full-time pastor could. Mm-hmm. And so they understand that, but still, you know, it taught me a few things about time management, about multitasking, if you will, at times. Mm-hmm. Making ministry phone calls on my lunch break, or going to hospitals on my lunch break, or driving back and forth to work, calling people, checking on them, things like that. It was a lot more phone work, visiting people via phone than, you know, face-to-face in that kind of role. And it was very exhausting at times as well.
I imagine.
Especially when we started getting more children, you know.
Yeah.
And trying to raise a family, trying to pastor a church, trying to work a full-time job. For a while there, my commute back and forth to work was about an hour one way. And that was tough, especially when the four older kids were all about the same age. And they were real little and real young and all in diapers. And it was tough at times, but, you know, God provided the grace and strength to get me through those times.
Well, let me ask you, I'm trying to think of what's a way that doesn't sound rude to say this, but what I want to say is, what kind of church has a what did you call it?
Bivocational.
Bivocational. I don't mean it in a negative way. I just mean, like, you know, what reason would a church have for bivocational, not to have a full-time pastor?
Well, sometimes they're called part-time pastors. That term is not really indicative of the time you spend, of course, and that's why bivocational, that word, I guess, was brought into being. I don't know. But anyway, smaller churches often will have a bivocational pastor that don't feel like or that they can afford to pay someone in a full-time capacity. And sometimes they possibly could pay someone that in a full-time capacity, but they choose not to or what have you. But for whatever reason, they don't feel like they can, and sometimes they absolutely cannot pay somebody to be full-time. So that's kind of where most bivocational churches are. They're smaller and just don't have the funds to do it.
Now, when you went to full-time to be a full-time pastor, was this into a brand new church, or was there a church that you already worked at that, you know, transitioned over?
No, it was new. It was a new church. New church for me, of course. They've been there for 75 years, maybe something like that. But of course, it was a new pastorate for me.
Okay, yeah. Well, how much of an adjustment was that for you?
Well, it was sort of seamless, you know, because I was doing a lot of the things that I'm currently doing, you know, as far as preparing sermons and checking on folks, but it's allowed me greater time to seek vision, seek what are the next things we should be doing. It's allowed me more time to visit with people, to really spend more time in sermon preparation as well, and things like that. So it was somewhat seamless, and it really has helped me not to feel so exhausted all the time.
Oh, I bet.
While there's still a lot of work to be done, I don't have to work 70 or 80 hours now. With a full time job and pastoring as well. It's all that one role, which is nice.
Well, now, how I met you is through Larry Carter.
Yes.
And you know, he had asked me when he and I talked. He said, "Hey, you know, how do you find people to talk to?" And I said, "Well, you know, who you got?" And he said, he had mentioned in his in our chat that a pastor had got him on to blogging. And then, of course, when he introduced me to you through Twitter, I was like, "That's the pastor, I bet." And then he just said, "Hey, he's the guy." So tell me about that. Like, you must have been, if he's been blogging for 5 years, at least you must be have been blogging for much longer than that, because he said you'd been blogging, you know, before him.
A little bit. I'm not really sure when I started, to be honest with you. I think it was around, I'm trying to think back, around 07 probably, so okay. Not too much longer than him. Mine, you know, originally was very sporadic, and you know, I did it occasionally, maybe once a month, things like that. And so I guess it's a little bit longer than him. I remember when I started, the reason I started, I guess, I became a community guest columnist for Knoxville Sentinel, a local newspaper in Knoxville.
Knoxville what? You cut off on me. Yeah.
Knoxville News Sentinel.
Oh, okay, thanks.
I became a community columnist for them for a year. I wrote one column a month there for a year. They put out something in their paper saying, hey, if you're interested in writing a monthly column, send them a couple of examples of your writing, and we'll choose, you know, the best or the ones that we want to have in the paper. And I did, and didn't expect to hear back from them. And it was several months later when they finally, I guess, chose people and decided to do it. And I was one of them that they chose. So I wrote for a year, once a month for a year in the paper. And I enjoyed doing it, and had other things on my mind to write about. And so I started my blog then. And I guess I talked to Larry about that around that time and said, you know, this is just, he asked me what it's all about. You know, why are you doing this? I said, well, it's an outlet. It's an outlet to get ideas, thoughts, feelings, beliefs out there, to get them outside your own mind and let them walk around a little bit, things like that. And so I guess that's probably the conversation we had. We worked at the same place at the time.
Okay.
And we went on breaks together and occasionally lunch, but mostly it was there. Morning and afternoon breaks that he and I and a couple other guys met together in the cafeteria, and that's probably when that conversation happened.
It's interesting the idea that it's interesting what you said about the idea, getting your ideas, letting them walk around, because
right.
You know, when you start blogging, you really realize how much you have to say.
Right. Well, how much you know and how much you don't know. And it's a marketplace of ideas, if you will, that using that kind of term, where you can put your thoughts and beliefs and things out there. People can interact with you and maybe challenge some of what you believe or how you've expressed it sometimes. Because sometimes we express things in ways that sound okay to us, but someone else might say, hey, that's not the best way of expressing that. And so it challenges you and challenges you, stretches you, makes your ideas more better formulated sometimes, because you realize that you're impacting other people in a sense, and you need to be able to express what you believe in a way that is understandable to people that don't have your same background, your same educational level, your same anything at times. And so it helps. It helps you to have a better formulated, you know, opinions, thoughts, beliefs, things like that.
You know, what you made me think of is how many times I have thought that I had a certain opinion, and then when I go to write it down, that has made me examine what my real beliefs are. And because you actually, since you're writing, you're seeing the words. It's not like something funny happens when you're talking and all these words spill out of your mouth and you don't pay attention to what they are. And
right.
It's weird.
And you often see that what you think you know or what you think you believe have big holes where logic should be, and there's holes there, and you have to think about things in a different way to fill some of those holes and some of those gaps that you didn't realize were there until you started writing it.
Exactly. I mean, has that ever happened to you as you were writing? Has it ever, the writing process ever changed something as a pastor that you believed or thought, or, you know, didn't really, you know, like a belief that you had that maybe you hadn't examined fully, that you're like, hey,
well,
wait a second.
Yeah, there's more often than not, it happens with how to express it rather than the belief itself.
Okay.
You know, that there's big, the big things of God, like, you know, the Trinity, and how do you express that? How do you express something that is really at its core probably inexpressible? How do you explain? How do you draw it out? And so when you're thinking about it, writing about it, things like that, you have to really get it to where it's understandable to people that haven't studied it,
to people that
don't have the same kind of time you do maybe to study it out better. And so that it, in that way it changes. And, you know, writing about some of the social issues of our day, you know, and you have beliefs on those things. And but how do you express it in a way that is understandable, that is true, and you're going to tell the truth, but you also want to be kind while you're telling the truth? How do you do the, how do you tell the truth in love? And so when you write it down, sometimes that helps you. Okay, here's, okay, this, I'm going to tell the truth here, but I'm going to do it in a loving way. I'm going to tell what, explain what the Bible says about this particular issue. But I'm, I want to be gracious and kind while I do it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. I'm so, that's so nice to hear you say that, because I don't think that, I think that the internet can be a place that is vicious and cruel, where people are invisible, or they feel invisible, and so their most nasty things come out because they can't, they're not looking at the person's face when that person receives that nastiness.
Right, and I think that sort of goes back to talking about not being that kind of pastor or that kind of Christian, where you're angry, you know, all the time, and where everything you express is anger. You know, that there are things, of course, to be angry about, injustices in our world to be angry about. I understand that, but there are times when you can be someone that tells the truth, but not in an angry way, in a way that seeks the other person's good, and that seeks to be loving while you're doing it. And writing helps that process out, because you're, well, hopefully it does. And some people think it does, and they're just ranting, and they're just ranting. But in the case of folks that are trying to be thoughtful, it helps to see it in black and white.
Uh-huh.
You know, because whenever you and I are talking right now, there's voice inflections we can use. You know, we can laugh, and that's when you're writing it out, there's no voice inflections. There's no pauses for laughter. There's no, oh, okays, or anything, any kind of verbal cues that somebody's getting it. It's black and white. And that's a little more difficult. And it really challenges you to make sure that in black and white, this makes as much sense as if I am talking it out with somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, very good points. Well, you've already mentioned this, but one of the things I want to ask you about is, and I had read this on your blog, that you went, you have five kids, and you went from 1 to 4 in 5 months.
Mm.
So obviously, and you already said you know, you adopted children, but what was that experience like? I mean, if you don't mind talking about it, like how do you guys in 5 months all of a sudden you've got four kids? And how'd you handle it?
Yeah, it was wonderful and nerve-wracking and joyful and just absolutely crazy altogether. Early on in our marriage, we sort of found out that it would be very difficult for my wife to get pregnant. And so we looked into some things and some ways to try to make that happen, and it didn't happen, you know. And so we thought and prayed, and maybe we thought, well, you know, we'll give it a little bit of time and things like that, and it wasn't happening. And so she brought up the idea of being foster parents and being foster parents to adopt, foster to adopt, you know, on down the line. I wasn't open to that at first.
Oh, really?
I said, I don't want to do that. I want to have biological children. Let's keep trying. And she said, well, I don't think it's going to happen. And I said, well, let's keep trying. So I wasn't open to it. Looking back, I don't really know why, you know, that I wasn't. But I just, it wasn't something that was ever on my radar, I guess. I have a cousin that's adopted, but you know, they live in North Carolina. I wasn't around them much, and so people that I was around, I didn't really know a whole lot of folks that had been adopted or that had adopted children or anything like that, and just sort of a foreign kind of thing right from the get-go for me, to where I said no. Over the process of time, you know, of course, my wife was praying that I would change, and eventually I did. And so there was one, she had called for information from our Knox County DCS, Department of Children's Services, about being foster parents, and the information came, and I guess one day I said, hey, let's look into it, let's do it. And so we made the phone calls, and there were some classes we had to go through. They're called PATH classes, Parents as Tender Healers.
Oh, and, nice.
Yeah, that was, every Tuesday night for several weeks in a row, 3 hours, and we went to those classes.
Wow.
Learned about foster care, about being fostered to adoption, things like that. And so went through all that. They did a home study. They did all that. And on September 11th, 2001, the day that all that happened with the Twin Towers, we got final approval that day to be foster parents.
Really?
That was there. The final walkthrough of our home by the DCS worker and things like that. So it was a terrible day, obviously, for our country, but
sure.
For me and my family, that's still a good day for us in that sense because of what happened on that day. So that happens a few week or two later. We have our first placement of foster children. They were 7, 8, and 10, I think, were their ages. We were pretty sure they weren't going to stay with us long term, but they were there. And then in December.
So you right away, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you right away took multiples.
Yes, yeah.
And that's hard that's not that common, I don't think.
No, I don't think it is. And I'm not looking back on it. It may not have been the best thing because we went from not having any children to having we didn't have babies. We had older kids, when I say older, they weren't older, but 7, 8, and 10 are quite a bit older than what people usually get when they're seeking to do that kind of thing. And we didn't have any experience with any kids really. And so it was a little bit difficult, but we made it through. And then, in December is when, our oldest daughter was born. Of course, she didn't come right to us. She came to us, about a month later actually January 1st, 2002, she came to our home. And,
you were foster parents to a baby.
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
And so she came into her home and we had a pretty good idea that we were going to be able to adopt her. And so she came into her home and around that same time, the three that we originally had, they went to live with an aunt. And then we were foster parents to a few other kids in and out as well during that time for short times, a couple times, maybe it was 3 or 4 months. Things like that. But anyway, Noelle came to live with us, and I guess a year and a half later, we were able to adopt her. So now we're into 2003. I become pastor of a church in Rome County, which is where I live now.
Mm-hmm.
And we became foster parents up there. And in December of 2003, we, after signing up with them, they called us and said, hey, there's a little boy, 11-month-old boy down at the hospital whose mother has abandoned him. They took him to the hospital to check him out. Could you be emergency foster care for him? And we said, yes. We prayed about it quickly and said, yes. Went down to the hospital and picked a little fellow up, and that's Bradley. And Noelle and Bradley, they're two of our kids that we adopted. So no umbrella, we have them now. So went from 1 to 2 there in December of 2003. At that time, Noelle's birth mother was pregnant and Bradley's birth mother was pregnant.
No way.
At the same time, yeah. And, of course, they try to keep families together, siblings together. And so Jonathan's born in January, and we get a phone call. Hey, this child's been born. His mother knew that, I guess, that she was going to lose custody of him, so she just left him at the hospital.
Oh.
Do you want to take him in? And we knew that she was pregnant, and so we had already prayed about it. And we said, yes. So we went and picked him up that day. So that was in January. Yeah.
I got to go. I'm sorry. I can't talk to you now. I got to go pick up my kid, my new child from the hospital. Yeah.
And so that happens in January. Let's see. And Bradley's birth mom is pregnant, and we find out that she's, in jail.
Oh, no.
She gets out of jail and does some things to harm her body, basically. And Matthew is born prematurely in March. He's born with a grade 4 brain bleed. We're told that could lead to being profoundly disabled. To where he may not be able to walk or talk or anything like that. That we're told that he may have, because of that, may have severe cerebral palsy and things like that. And so, but they say, is this child you'd want to bring into your home? Now he's going to have to spend a couple months in the ICU. He may not even make it. Things like that. So we pray about that, and we decide to bring him in as well. Of course, he's in the ICU. We go and see him, little, just tiny, just just very small, little guy, and very spotting. You know, he's a heart and breathing monitor and all that kind of stuff. He gets well enough for us to bring him home in May, I believe. And so we bring him home then. He's on a heart and breathing monitor and all this medicines, and still don't know the extent at that point of any disability you might have. And so we went from one to four in the matter of those few months right there.
Wow. And two of them, one still in diapers and two of them infants, basically, little babies.
Right. Well, I think at that particular time, let's see, before Noelle was still sort of in diapers. She was 2-3 years old, I guess. But 1 to 3. No, she was two years old. 2.5. Bradley is, 1 year old. And Jonathan and Matthew are both newborns. And so everybody's in diapers. And my mommy's went from reading and watching sports and playing basketball to changing diapers and feeding babies, because it was just, it was sort of like having triplets, and in a way like having quadruplets, but
yeah,
it's sort of like having triplets with 1 year old and two newborns. And it was rough there at first. Matthew woke up a lot during the night. His monitor would go off when his breathing wasn't as strong as it should have been. And so we'd have to wake up and mess with him and get him medicine and things like that. Of course, I was trying to pastor a church and work a full-time job and commuting an hour back and forth.
Yeah.
And that was a very trying time, but now Matthew is 9 years old, and he has very, very mild cerebral palsy. Mm. He walks, talks, everything. He just, he has some tightness in his legs. What they thought might be very profoundly disabled, he is not.
Well, that's good.
And to God be the glory for all that.
Yeah.
But that was one baby to four in a matter of just a few months. It was very difficult.
I imagine.
We made it through.
But you know, that's really cool though, that not that it would have mattered either way, but it's cool that they're siblings, biological siblings, but that you guys took them in to keep that together, because there is something about I would be sad if I knew that I had a sibling out there in the world somewhere that I didn't know.
Sure, sure. And, of course, they all do. All of our kids do.
Oh, they do.
Yeah, both sets of siblings have older siblings that are elsewhere. Of course, we, Chris and I, weren't married and weren't able to do anything about them when they were taken into custody.
Things
like that. So, but they do. But they do have siblings there with them, and they have one person there in the house that looks quite a bit like them, and and things like that. And so it's we're blessed. We're very blessed. And then of course, 2 years after the adoptions and all that, my wife gets pregnant. Which, that seems to be the not necessarily the norm, but you hear that story
when
people adopt children, and all of a sudden there you go. So
yeah. Well, yeah, that's just really amazing, and it's wonderful that you guys were open to go through all that chaos and hard time.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
and big family too. It's not everybody has five people,
children.
And there's some unique, semi-unique things that come along with having that many children that folks don't think about. Just the cost of everything being so much more, but you try to do the best you can to work around those things and still provide, fun times for your children and things like that. And so it can be tough, can be rough, but we're blessed. We're glad that we were able to do it.
Well, that's wonderful. Actually, speaking of the money, I had just read, your post about going to the movies. You're like, well, we call it the dollar movies, but it's $2.50. But still, there's five kids,
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
It costs $25 to take, for me to take two kids to the movies, with my nephews or nieces, It's crazy.
If we take them to a regular movie, you can get above $50 real quick.
Oh, man.
Very easily.
Well, one of the things that Larry had said when he suggested your name to me, he said, you should talk to Seeking Pastor. That's your Twitter handle, for people who don't know you. He's a Baptist pastor raising a nun and four other kids. So what is that about? I'm like, but aren't your kids young?
Yeah, no, he's making fun of a little bit of our youngest daughter's name. Her name is Mary Hope.
Oh.
And I remember when I told him what the baby's name was going to be, he started calling her Sister Mary Hope.
Oh, cute. I was like, I don't get it, but I'm going to ask.
Yeah, she's not a nun, and hopefully won't be one, but... If she is,
nothing against nuns, y'all, but you know.
Yeah, hope she's of the flying variety if she ever is one.
I remember that show. All right, and here's the other thing that he mentioned it to me then, and then just recently, when I told him, I said I'm gonna be talking to a friend of yours, and he mentioned it again to ask you about him taking you to the emergency room. Is that a story that can be shared?
Sure. Yeah, he enjoys bringing that up. That is.
Well,
that's
seems
one of his
like it to me too. I'm like, that's the second time.
He enjoys bringing that up anytime he can. We worked at the same place. He was actually my supervisor when I first started there. It's a big mobile home company, and at that time we both worked in the financial arm of it, the financial institution part of that company. He was my supervisor. We sat next to each other. Probably about 6 or 7 months into my employment there is when this incident happened. It was in the afternoon. I went to the restroom, like you have to sometimes, you know, just one of those things that you have to do. I went into the stall and closed the stall door. For whatever reason, my badge, we have clip-on badges that clipped onto your shirt or whatever, my badge fell to the floor there in the stall. And, of course, I bent down to pick it up. People don't normally think about what their head might hit when they bend down. And there was a coat hook on the back of the door. Now, a lot of folks, I'm 6'7", and most folks would not hit the coat hook, but somebody my size, you know, it's a possibility that they would. And I did, and it hit me on top of my head at the sort of it was on top toward my forehead, I guess, but on top of my head, it hit me there, and it dug into my scalp, basically, and it was bad. It cut my head.
Oh no!
And I knew it did immediately, and I mean it hurt. And of course, blood. When you cut your head, it bleeds very
lots
easily.
Of blood vessels up there.
yeah. And so my head starts bleeding, and I fall back onto the toilet, and blood begins pouring on the floor. And I'm sitting there going, and. The guy in the stall next to me is probably, you know, wondering what I have for lunch, you know.
Oh, no.
Thinking I need to avoid whatever it was he ate, you know. But anyway, I'm bleeding, and I pull paper on my head and walk out to the sinks and look at it in the mirror, and it's just pouring blood. And I take paper towels and put it on my head, and I think, what am I going to do? This is insane. What am I going to do? So. Well, the only thing I knew to do is go tell my supervisor and basically, you know, tell him that I need to, you know, go get this checked out because it's bleeding profusely. So I go back to my desk, it's right next to Larry's, and I say, hey, Larry. He said, what's up? I said, I'm having a problem. And that's when I show him, and he just, uh-oh. And so he has to take me to the emergency room as my supervisor. It's, you know, part of his job to do that, I guess.
he's in charge of the emergency runs.
Yeah. And I had to, you know, of course, get a drug screen because it's an accident that happened at work. And so he had some kind of old little bitty truck that I barely fit into. he drives me to the hospital emergency room. And the first thing I have to do is go back into a bathroom to give him a specimen. And, of course, I'm not real fond of going back to where it's a place I almost just got decapitated in, but I go back in there, and anyway, I ended up having to get like 6 staples in my head from that injury,
and
he stays with me all the time, and he drives me back to work, and at that time, I think where we worked had maybe 600 or 700 people there, And by the time I got back, it seemed like everybody knew what had happened.
Oh, of course they did. The evidence is all over the bathroom floor.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was awful. But yeah, he likes bringing it up quite frequently to me and to anybody that will listen to it. That was a bad deal. But,
well, I'm sorry I'm laughing through it. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, but, you know, good thing is I don't think I'm going to lose my hair. I have a pretty good head of hair, and good thing I have a lot of scars up there from various things I've hit my head on, including a bathroom stall hook.
Well, anyway. I was going to ask you about, you know, being 6'7", but like, what, how does that affect your life and the perils? And now I fully see.
Absolutely. I, you know, hit my head on things. I've broken globes, ceiling fans.
I've hit
by ceiling fans that are on, things like that. And yeah, I'm really not sure how I ended up 6'7". My dad's 5'10", 5'11". My mom's 5'6". And I have a brother that's 6'1 or 6'2", and I'm 6'7". So.
This, one of those random genes, like, snuck through.
Yeah. It must have. My dad, he quit growing. He tells me when he was in eighth grade. When I was in eighth grade, I was as tall as he was, and he just assumed I was going to quit growing, too. And I just kept on. And
kept on going.
I can't fit in certain cars, and I hit my head a lot.
Oh. I got one last thing to ask you, and
sure.
In your blog you mentioned the hook incident, and then you also mentioned your wife almost shooting you. What was that?
Oh, goodness. Oh, that was a long time ago. Let me think for a second. We lived in a house, and she wanted goats and chickens and things like that. She wanted to start raising goats and chickens, and so we started doing that, and we put up a chicken fence underneath our porch. The porch was kind of high off the ground, and so we put some chicken wire and things like that. And I guess it was one evening we were out there, and she saw something in with the chickens, you know. And so she runs inside. She starts hollering about this chicken, and I'm not really sure what all she's hollering about, but when I follow her into the house, she starts walking out with a gun in her hand.
Oh, my.
You know? And, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to get shot. But anyway, she goes outside and has to shoot a skunk.
Oh.
Yes, I think it was a skunk. That was a long time ago. I'm pretty sure it was a skunk.
I believe I've let a skunk get the chickens and wander off on its own.
Yeah, and I think I may have mentioned something about how it seemed like whatever it was disintegrated, because whatever she shot, there was fur everywhere, but we never found the body of whatever she ended up shooting that night. But anyway, that's what I get for marrying a woman from Alabama.
Yeah, so all you're seeing is she's yelling about something you don't know, and she's walking through the house with a gun.
That's right. You know, that's pretty, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
Oh, my. Living in the country.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for sharing all your stuff. Anything else that we need to know about Matt Cannon?
You know, not really. I mean, I'm just a guy that loves God. I love people, you know, and the tagline I think of my blog is something like, you know, seeking pastor, seeking to live, laugh, and love like Jesus and help others do the same, you know. And
yeah,
that's really what my life is, what it's about, you know. And I fail sometimes. I mess up like everybody else does, but God's grace is sufficient for everybody, including me and others as well. If we'll just trust Him, if we'll seek Him, if we'll, you know, submit to Him and His will and trust Jesus. You know, life is hard, but there's a lot of laughter, a lot of good things. And more than anything, we have a good God that's big, that's righteous and loving and holy and true. And as we trust in Him, He'll lead us home. He'll lead us home, and we can have fun along the way.
Amen. I want to give you an amen.
All right. Amen. Do it. Saying amen to a preacher is like saying six to a bulldog. It's all good.
Well, I have enjoyed, I've really enjoyed getting to know you better, talking to you and learning more about you. It was really nice.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it as well. Thanks for having me on your podcast there. It's been fun.
Yay! All right. Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much. And you have a good night.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
My thanks to Matt, and I hope you'll look him up at seekingpastor.wordpress.com and on Twitter at seekingpastor. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Michelle, and this has been People I Almost Know. If there's something you'd like to talk about or someone you'd like me to talk to, you can drop me a line on the website or give me a shout on Twitter or on Facebook. And if you'd like to meet other people I almost know, subscribe on iTunes or on the Stitcher app, or visit peopleialmostknow.com.